You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Gracias, Sarita, and thank you all very much for being here. We're gathered to shout out against mining injustice in Canada and around the world, and I really want to thank everyone for coming out this evening. It's incredibly important for us. A great deal of work has been put into this evening and tomorrow, and we're really thrilled that you're here. Thank you to Chief George and the welcome to the Coast Salish territory here, and particularly welcome to our international guests. It's wonderful to have you here. Sarita talked about Guatemala has a history of brutal suppression, but this has become renewed recently in the last decade or so over the issue of foreign-based, mostly Canadian mining operations, aggressively moving in on their, in particularly rural and indigenous territories. There are over 250 new mining concessions in Guatemala alone. Most are engaged in open pit mining and mountaintop removal using cyanide leaching processes to extract gold and nickel, contaminating local watersheds and endangering the lives of local people. On a recent visit, I met a whole bunch of people. I was there with a group called Rights Action. I was speaking at a Women in Mining conference, and I met many people, but two stuck with me in my heart and soul more than most. One was Hernan Hobhok, who was hit. He was playing soccer in the same attack that Sarita just described at the El Astor nickel mine. The thugs came into the community. They just shot at random, and they shot him in the back. He didn't die. The hospital wouldn't treat him, and he is now in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. His young wife took their little three-year-old child and left him. He's moved back in with his parents with not much of a future, obviously. He was an absolutely total innocent bystander, not in any way, shape, or form involved, but of course has become a powerful activist now, just a beautiful young man that touched me. Another was Diodora Hernandez, who in her late 50s lives in a small little community or rural area near the Marlin Mine. The Marlin Mine is a famous mine owned by Goldcorp of Vancouver, which uses and destroys 250,000 liters of water per day, called by the local people the Project of Death. In fact, it's so bad that in 2010, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights called for the Guatemalan government to remove the company or to stop operations, which they haven't done. In that same attack, in a different attack the same year, July 7th, 2010, she was coming out of her house, a very small little subsistence farm with chickens and goats and so on. She refused to give it to the Marlin Mine. And a masked man came out behind a tree, and he took a shotgun and he shot her in the face in front of her daughter and her screaming five-year-old granddaughter. The police wouldn't come to take her away, and the ambulance wouldn't come. So terrified are they of these people connected to this mine. And so her daughter had to take her to the hospital in a taxi. She didn't die. She came back, and she is still living there and refuses to this day to cede any of this area to the company. But mysteriously, her water on her land has been cut, and she can't grow any food. For Jamen and Diodora and the thousands of others through the Americas who are dealing with Canadian mining companies, there is no recourse, not from their own police, not from their own government, certainly not from our government, whose sole mandate around mining is to promote the interests of Canadian mining companies. The extractive industries, mineral industry, is exploding around the world. Mining Watch reports that every year, mining companies dump about 180 million tons of toxic mine waste into the oceans, rivers, and lakes around the world. This is equivalent to 1.5 times the amount of municipal solid waste that the U.S. sends to landfills every year. The tailings, which is what they are, contain as many as three dozen dangerous chemicals, including arsenic, lead, mercury, and cyanide. Mining industries are becoming much more aggressive in their global search and their relentless search for new sources of minerals. And they're leaving behind them a trail of environmental and human rights abuses. However, it is Canada's dirty little secret that we want to talk about tonight, and that is that the world's biggest and worst operators are from Canada. 75% of the world's mining companies are headquartered in Canada, and they are growing really quickly. It's $130 billion of investment is projected for the next 5 years in the Canadian mining sector. With the price of gold going up and up and up, the profits are huge, as are the stakes. Barrick Gold grew from a company worth $642 million 10 years ago to a company worth $4.5 billion, that's million to billion, a decade later. Its CEO, who is the highest paid person in Canada, made $24 million in 2010. That's $13,000 an hour. Not far behind is the CEO of Goldcorp, who earned $11.4 million in the same year. A study done by the industry itself and leaked to the media says, and I quote, "Canada is far and away the worst offender of environmental and human rights abuses in mining around the world." And this is something that we need to say to each other as Canadians. Those of us who are Canadian in this room, we need to start admitting what our mining companies have become and what they're doing. And oh, do they have a friend in Stephen Harper and his government who refuses to put any leash on them whatsoever. Canadian mining companies are notorious for refusing to cooperate in investigations back in countries of the global south where they've been implicated or potentially implicated in local atrocities. And they know they face absolutely no penalty back in Canada at all. A couple of years ago, Harper easily defeated, a modest private member's bill that would have given the government limited authority to at least withhold funding from CETA for companies under investigation. And it is aggressively promoting trade agreements that give corporations the right to sue governments all around the world, very similar to the Chapter 11 provisions in NAFTA. Our government at the moment is promoting and negotiating something called CETA, the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement with Europe, that would give European corporations permanent access to the resources that they come in and invest in, because they would have the right to sue the Canadian government, potentially other levels of government, if these governments decided to assert some kind of authority or even bring in environmental regulations to them. But these same rules are giving our corporations, our mining corporations, the same rights in other countries. For instance, Pacific Rim, Canadian company, sued the government of El Salvador for refusing a license for a gold mining company that would pollute 10,000 liters of water a day. And now, in the thing that most shocks and upsets me, they are cutting ties to traditional aid and development groups like Kairos and adopting Canadian mining companies and their cooperating charities, I call them enablers, as their new partners in aid. This shift is coordinated with the Departments of International Trade and Natural Resources to ensure that all aid is now done with a plan that directly fuels economic growth and international trade at home and benefits Canadian mining companies abroad. Further, the Harper government has made it clear that it will tie aid to those countries who make our corporations welcome with friendly investment policies. In other words, they're going to give special treatment to countries that say, well, we'll maintain or adopt investment-friendly policies for your mining corporations, and then these corporations with these enabling charities will dole out the money. CETA has already approved $50 million in projects linked to the mining industry since the Harper government took power. But this trend is obvious and growing, and Canadian aid money is leaving Africa and other nations desperate for help and moving to mining-rich countries in Latin America, where Canadian mining interests are so prevalent. This means that Canadian tax dollars, and I want to be clear here what this means to us. This means your money and my money, tax dollars, Canadian aid agencies, and potentially even Canadian ambassadors may be implicated in the suppression, the brutal suppression of anti-mining activists and anti-mining communities in the global south. This is appalling. It is obviously as well put a huge dent and a chill on advocacy work in Canada. Shame on the Harper government. This is a wicked project. This is a wicked policy. These mining companies are our ambassadors in Latin America, and they are doing great disservice to us. I mean, the view of Canada, if you go to many parts of the world now, has fundamentally changed. I don't think most Canadians still understand that. There was a time when we used to joke that when Americans traveled in some countries, they would borrow a Canadian flag to wear or put on their backpack or whatever. If you travel now through many parts of Latin America, particularly through Central America, borrow an American flag, you'll be more welcome. Now, back home, the same agenda is taking place here. The Harper government has gutted environmental assessment, basically cutting the time frame, basically saying they're going to decide which environmental projects to take and which not. And anyway, whatever an environmental assessment panel says, they have the right as cabinet just to dismiss. They're gutting the Fisheries Act. They're removing habitat from fishery as if fish can live in dirty water, as if these are not connected at all. They've cut thousands of scientists and employees from Parks Canada, from Environment Canada, from Natural Resources. This is a government at war with nature. This is the most anti-environmental government we have ever had. And this is happening, and I think it's really important to know that this is happening. It's a backdrop for a massive invasion of energy and mining and forestry projects that are coming to our country. Ontario has what's called the Ring of Fire. It's 5,000 square kilometers of pristine wilderness believed to contain $30 billion worth of chromite. Just the government of Ontario is also modifying its environmental assessment rules to conform to those weak new rules of the Canadian government. In Quebec, it's called Plan Nord. They're expecting $80 billion in new investment because they're going to open up forest and mining exploration in 1.2 million square kilometers. That is 72% of Quebec's geographic area. 72% is going to be opened up to a free-for-all. Think of the gold rush. It's going to be exactly the same kind of thing. Not to be undone, the British Columbia government is looking at approvals of at least 60 mining projects, some of them new mines, some of them old mines opening up, some of them current mines expanding. There are many of them. The Ajax mine, it will be an open pit operation on the doorstep of Kamloops, which would yield 500 million tons of copper. There's the Raven coal mine on Vancouver Island, which would extend to 3,100 hectares and would produce over a million tons of highly volatile bituminous coal every year. And it's also a huge and permanent threat to the local watershed. And then, of course, we have Taseko mine. We're going to hear a great deal about that this weekend, where the company wants to put a huge copper and gold mine in an area belonging to the Chilcotin people that's already been rejected at one time by the federal government. But of course, with the new rules, it's anybody's guess, of course, which way it's going to go next time this project comes forward. Christy Clark's government plans to build a massive 344-kilometer industrial transmission line into west central BC. They're planning 11 new mines in this area alone, and this is all to promote massive industrial expansion in this pristine wilderness, which is home to the headwaters of three major rivers and a major salmon and fish and grizzly habitat. So if you hear anger in my voice, it's because I'm really angry. These stories sometimes bring me to tears. Chief George said the same thing. But our dear friend Margaret Atwood says, "The world seen clearly is seen through tears. So why ask me what is wrong with my eyes?" I have come here, and we have come here this weekend to expose the practices and profits of an industry that's out of control, and the governments who not only won't stop them, but who aid and abet them. We have come together to say that we understand that the first and the worst abuses and the worst assaults are taking place in Indigenous territories here in Canada and around the world. And we will not stand by and make Indigenous communities struggle against these companies by themselves. This is an absolute promise. We have also come together this weekend to support Peter Julian's brave and visionary proposed legislation to bring the rule of law to the Canadian mining industry when it operates in the Global South. And we have come together to build a powerful people's network of solidarity and action that will challenge the greed and the profit of these corporations and bring them to justice. Those with power never, ever cede it without a fight. Let's give them one. Thank you.